Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is tape or broadcast number 486, March 28, 1981. Happiness is going to use book sales and finding some valuable little goodies. There are library sales and private sales going on in this area this time of year through the spring and into the summer. And yesterday I went to one of these sales, and the Navy Postgraduate School here donated some volumes to the sale of government printing office testimony and State Department papers dating to 1934, 1935, 38, 1940, 41, 46. Valuable information of plans to stop the rearmament of Germany, the Nye Committee, with one document. It's a large book, Foreign Relations of the United States, Diplomatic Papers of 1935, wonderful hearings about neutrality, the Nye Committee, that's the committee that Alger Hiss worked for, where he was calling the multinationals on the board for rearming Germany after the First War. And it has to do with hearings and letters of public officials about the rearming of Germany and also attitudes of the United States with respect to the League of Nations regarding traffic in opium and dangerous drugs and smuggling liquor into the United States. These books are just marvelous, and they're not complete sets, but there's some from each year, and there are a lot of goodies in them. Another volume, volume 7 that I got at the same sale, is Foreign Relations of the United States in 1946. One group of books are about the problem of rearming Germany and Japan after World War I, and the possibility of peace or the impossibility of peace, and should they sell weapons or not. And then one of the volumes was 1946, after World War II was over. World War I was not successful, the League of Nations and disarming the various countries. We had World War II, and then in 1946, when the war was over 1 year, the congressional groups got together. This was an order from the time of Lincoln's administration to publish the foreign relations papers. And this was a set from the United States Government Printing Office that I obtained from 1946. They described in there the present situation in the Near East, a danger to world peace, and the document going from Undersecretary of State Dean Acheson to other secretaries of state, other departments. They said that the present time, the Near East, for which the purpose of this memorandum may be considered to include Turkey, the Aegean, Eastern Mediterranean Islands, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, there is no Israel for a couple of years, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, is a breeding ground for international misunderstandings. The national objectives of two great powers, namely the Soviet Union and the Great Britain, collide head-on in this region. The most important interest of the United States in the Near East should be to prevent the development in this area of conflict that might eventually give birth to the Third World War. Behind protestations of a desire for international cooperation, devotion to principles of democracy and loyalty to the principle of non-interference, four of the world's great powers are carrying on four different opposing policies in the Near East. And this book goes into the documents of Great Britain and their policies in the Middle East, and France with their paramount bases in Syria and Lebanon, and the Soviet Union's desire for Turkey and the Dardanelles and the Mediterranean going through Iran, and the United States that took an attitude of helping third world people, but they didn't refer to them as third world, they referred to them as countries that should raise their standard of living, have educational and cultural levels to qualify to make them play a role in the world affairs appropriate to their numbers and talents. The United States was expected to help those people. Later we called them third world people. But in 1946, this volume 7 of Foreign Relations says the United States has made little progress in carrying out its own policy in the Near East. And it goes on to say that we only back the wealthy countries and go along with Great Britain and France, and that inevitably, probably, in the Near East, it would lead to a Third World War. Now, that was 1 year after World War II, and the foreign relations summary and the documents and the correspondence of the State Department published by the United States Government Printing Office detailed the causes for World War III and what we should do and what we didn't do, and made it very clear that far back in 1946 that we made promises to the impoverished nations and didn't keep up with them, but played along with the major nations. And as I say, it would lead to a conflict of war. It's pretty pathetic to believe that people were talking about World War III so soon after 80 million people had either been killed or displaced in World War II, and led us into a warfare mentality and economy, thinking of nothing but war from the time that World War II was over. A few weeks ago, with the exception of last week, I've been talking about the banking scandal of the Wells Fargo Bank in California, linked to the Nugan Hand Bank. That's Frank Nugan and Michael Hand. It was their names that were used in Australia. The missing CIA money. In case those of you didn't hear those broadcasts in 1 second, I'll try to summarize it. A bank was formed in Australia in the 60s, late 60s, 67 or 68, with money that was supposed to go to Southeast Asia, but it was CIA money linked to the assassination team's black money or killing money, espionage money linked to narcotics traffic, and set up solely for the CIA. And after the conflict in Southeast Asia was going full speed and about to wind down, a Michael Hand of the Green Berets Special Forces of the Phoenix Program, who worked with William Colby in Southeast Asia, combined with Michael Hand to form a bank called Nugan Hand. It was Frank Nugan, the Special Forces agent, and Michael Hand. Frank Nugan was murdered last year. About 12 people related to that bank story have been murdered. One of them, John Paisley, who worked for the National Security Council and the CIA, who had direct links from his yacht to Australia and worked with the people in the CIA involved with the Nugan Hand Bank. And Michael Hand is missing, and as yet there's no speculation about where he is, although this will make important news stories if he is indeed still alive. If he's dead and some people murdered him and haven't been killed also, the story will continue to surface. And in the process of the CIA and FBI investigating that missing $55 million, it was anywhere from $55 million to $1 billion, the FBI and CIA tapped into, I believe, the Wells Fargo Bank in Beverly Hills. Now, as yet, the news media hasn't connected these two banks, but I believe that time will make a connection. In time, you'll see the connections of the Wells Fargo to the Nugan Hand Bank. Now, the Wells Fargo story broke in the sports section of various newspapers. Started with Harold Smith, a man that was promoting boxing, who used Muhammad Ali's name for the boxing promotion, and he allegedly embezzled $21 million from the Wells Fargo Bank in Beverly Hills. And over the past months, the story has been making the newspaper, the front page of the New York Times, two different times, and finally on NBC News this week with Jane Pauley saying, and Tom Brocco, this story will not go away. And Harold Smith was on national television. And the reason I want to start with that Wells Fargo again to update you on some of the stories is because now it has gone into international from Beverly Hills and the 10 or 20 branches of the Wells Fargo from Los Angeles or San Diego to San Francisco. It's now in Nigeria and other African countries, which could be Angola or South Africa. And you'll see a lot more news about Angola and South Africa because I believe it is linked to what started as a simple story of a Beverly Hills bank embezzlement. Since we talked about it last, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal, March 24th, headline story saying, Wells Fargo account of fraud or their system to block such acts of embezzlement are being questioned. Translated, that means the Wells Fargo Bank lied about the missing money. This article says the embezzlement of this money wasn't as neatly executed as bank officials originally portrayed, and despite their best efforts, the embezzlement has become a story that won't die with Wells Fargo. Another story, the TV program with Tom Brocco and Jane Pauley this last week on the 26th of March, Harold Smith was on television saying that this involves four bank managers, and then, in addition to a New York Times story, He said it involves $80,000 a day that the various managers were to be paid, a payoff, having to do with oil money from Nigeria, and Harold Smith would get 8% of that money, and he already got $21 million, and he was told, you can have as much as you want. Now, Harold Smith said that this story involved the Japanese mafia, and I hardly believe that two or three black men in Beverly Hills were going to get $80,000 a day from Nigeria just out of a fluke from an oil contract. They don't have that kind of noxie, and Harold Smith wasn't into this kind of operation. He was barely making it until 1978 when he came across all of this money. If he would introduce these people to Muhammad Ali and set up these accounts, evidently they had been funneling it through other people's accounts for what he said were 8 to 10 years, and they used his account and let the money siphon through their new accounts, disguising it through these black sports operators. And then I believe when the Nugent Hand story in Australia broke, the FBI and CIA were led up to Beverly Hills, where Muhammad Ali and Gene Kawakami and Ben Lewis and Harold Smith had been to Australia with trips back and forth while involved with the Wells Fargo Bank. Another story, UPI, February, at the end of February, that I didn't have on the air. It said, Wells Fargo Bank procedures to be eyed. This is a UPI story saying they would go into it more closely. The New York Daily News had a story last week, shady land deals, high rollers, and Wells Fargo. And they mentioned again in New York the $200 to $300 million scandal, that Smith is, in quotes, key to a bigger scandal. Then they mentioned, other articles have mentioned, that it's traced to a woman named Wilma Fisher and George Fisher from Las Vegas, who also have strong contacts with narcotics and so forth in Florida, and then Hollywood, and then the offices in Century City that Mr. Fisher opened. George Fisher, a close friend of Gene Kawakami, the manager of the Miracle Mile branch of the bank, is from Hong Kong with 10 aliases, most of them Oriental. He came into the Hollywood scene in 1976, with $741,000 from the Silver Seas Hotel in Florida that went into the Miracle Mile branch of the Wells Fargo. So you're getting a person from Hong Kong with many aliases going, living in Vegas, moving to Gardena, California, associating and renting from the manager of the Wells Fargo, and these trips of these various people to Australia, this controversial Nugent Hand thing not solved while they're traveling down there, and now bringing in Nigeria, which makes it a different ball of wax. Because, as I say, Nigeria is very much in the news these days. Also, the New York Daily News said the FBI is investigating their deals in Memphis, Tennessee. The Hollywood branch is missing $3.5 million. There's a Bank of Commerce in Memphis that has forged investments in real estate deals, and it's tangled not only to California and Australia, but Memphis, Tennessee, Florida, Vegas, and Nigeria. Another article in the Santa Barbara News, Harold Smith, in quotes, says they were laundering money through my account. The Wells Fargo's most crucial documents are missing, and the bank says they do not exist. Another story, this is the LA Times. Muhammad Ali allegedly received $1 million from the funds of Wells Fargo. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that Muhammad Ali said this story would make any Hollywood script look very mild. And Muhammad Ali mentioned that the CIA and the FBI are guarding his house, and he's bugged and can't say a word. And there have been no interviews with him since this story broke. This is New York Times, March the 20th, Robert Lindsay, front page story. Four people at Wells Fargo have not been named publicly that have been involved in the fraud. They don't call it a boxing fraud anymore. Harold Smith says at least four bank officials not previously mentioned are involved. Smith said that they started using his accounts to secure oil concessions in Nigeria and elsewhere in Africa. Now, the elsewhere is the big word, because Ronald Reagan right now is beginning to send espionage and counterintelligence troops into Angola, and that would take secret funding, which I believe could have come or been planned to come from this Wells Fargo espionage connection. And he also is meeting secretly. His UN representative, Jean Kirkpatrick, was meeting with the highest counterintelligence agents of South Africa just this last weekend. So the elsewhere is the country or countries that we don't know about yet, but I'm alerting that you will see them in the news and that the African countries must be aware of these. If Mae Brussel is, I'm sure they are. And four of the top South African intelligence officials were in this country this week, and they intend to step up anti-Angola incidences in Angola. But the various countries, Nigeria and Angola, are responding to Ronald Reagan this week, stay out and don't mess with us. And they must be aware that this money or investment can't just be oil, but must be organized crime and counterintelligence if they're paying such kinds of fees, siphoning $80,000 a day to a group of people in California. In the New York Times article, it mentions that Jean Kawakami, who's brought in the Japanese mafia in this, so it takes in Africa and Japan and Hong Kong and Australia now, talks about the $80,000 a day and how Harold Smith was offered $12 million, which he accepted, and he was told he could have anything I needed. According to the New York Times article, Mr. Lewis, that's the manager of the Beverly Hills branch, and Mr. Kawakami, that's the manager of the Miracle Mile area, Wilshire District in Los Angeles, were close friends with other Fargo executives, and a number of them, many more than Wells Fargo has acknowledged, were involved. Now, I'm talking about $55 million in Australia and this $200 to $300 million in Beverly Hills, and I will be bringing this up as these countries break in the news, because I think that they tipped into the Beverly Hills espionage area of funding counterintelligence when they were looking for the FBI, the CIA connections down in Australia, because all these people, as I say, were linked and down in Australia. William Buckley had an article in today's paper, the Sunday paper, Meeting with South Africans, and he puts down the fact that Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick was meeting with General P.W. van der Westhuizen and talking about relationships with South Africa. The only thing that would force her to do that, if it really was illegal, because Andrew Young had to resign as ambassador to the UN when he went one Saturday afternoon to the home of some of the PLO. She was meeting with these people, according to Buckley, because of indispensable security and control of shipping lanes in South Africa. And he defends that Buckley even has some smart aleck suggestion that if the South Africans want to come in this country, they should do like he did. He said, I spied for the CIA, and he said they should wear a red wig and paint their face black. And Buckley goes on and makes some disparaging remarks about the blacks and makes fun in his usual way of the meeting of Jean Kirkpatrick with the South Africans. But I have an idea that some of that Wells Fargo money was going or has been headed to South Africa to step up the forces against Angola, and the necessity of their getting together now was urgent. Also, today's paper said secret U.S. mission will visit Africa. And again, the United States is sending, how secret can it be if it's an Associated Press story? But they're going down to consult with about U.S. moves towards Namibia and South Africa, that South Africa is moving into this country. And Nigeria is saying to the United States and other African nations that they're deeply concerned about America and its relationship to South Africa. By March 24th, this last week, Nigeria was objecting to the relationship of the United States policy towards Nigeria and other African countries. And I think that the Wells Fargo story is going to bring a lot more missions to South Africa and other countries. There was a death this last week of a woman in Los Angeles, an article, L.A. stabbing death, no one helped the victim. A young woman, Gloria Anina, 34 years old, native of Nigeria, studying at Loyola University, a graduate studio in communications, And she was murdered, and it goes on to say that the people in the apartment saw her murdered and didn't call the police. They saw her attacked and knifed and dragged into her place. But the only reason they called the cops was when they saw that her car was missing and a note on the door, "Please don't bother me. I'm studying for exams." And they believed that another Nigerian had murdered her. So I'm sure that this is related to the Wells Fargo story, a woman studying communications from Nigeria and this country, and you'll pick up other stories along the way that will be linked to these missing millions of dollars that are seeping out. And as long as Harold Smith stays alive, he leaks a few little pieces of information about once every 4 or 5 days. Now, there's a lot in the news about the backfighting and the stabbing going on, anger of Alexander Haig, and I've avoided talking about him for a few weeks, but I guess I have to mention him at this time, as repulsive as it is. Alexander Haig is mad. He wants to be head of the emergency contingency unit. He wants to control foreign policy, and he also wanted to have total control of domestic policy. Alexander Haig could create a Reichstag type of operation and take control of the White House. He had it when Richard Nixon was slipping out of office, and he worked closely with Alexander Butterfield, the man who taped Richard Nixon to make sure that Nixon got out of office. And Haig and Butterfield had been closely associated in the Pentagon together from the time that John Kennedy was murdered. They had been associates. Incidentally, Alexander Haig had called in his friend Butterfield into the White House in 1969 when Richard Nixon was president, January 69, and Butterfield was living in Australia. That's the time when the Nugenhan Bank was full steam. It got a lot of money in 73 for counterintelligence operations, but also it was being set up in 1969 and the late 60s, and that's when Alexander Butterfield was stationed in Australia. And as soon as Nixon was in office, he was called back and went into the White House. He was, as I say, in the Pentagon with Haig and Butterfield were together at the time, right after John Kennedy was murdered from 1964. Then they went on to take other jobs. Butterfield went to the War College and then down to Australia, and Haig worked his way up. And I'll do a little bit more on that in a minute. Well, Haig would like to take over the White House and the domestic affairs, but there were a couple of incidences last week that I think stepped in his way. I think he's moving too fast, too far. There's too many of them taking position, but he really, I think because of what he knows, went on all these years through the White House and being there at the height of Watergate as well as every other crucial period through the 60s and 70s, he just assumed that he could walk over all the new people that are in Washington right now who haven't been there that long, the new team that Ronald Reagan has appointed. And there were several things that happened before the quick announcement that Vice President Bush would take over the domestic emergency team that is being formed. The first story last week was one that Bush had been shot. The person was apprehended and arrested. It was taken right out of the news, and we haven't read much of that. We know Bush wasn't killed, but the person that was arrested might have told something that he wasn't supposed to say. The second thing is the hushed-up affair in Florida last week of the 13 men camouflaged down in Crystal River, Florida. There hasn't been a thing in the news all week about that, with their semi-automatic weapons, and they were a group that allegedly were recruited by Soldier of Fortune, which is a strictly CIA organization, operation and publication, and they belonged to a Vietnam Special Forces group. Again, the same assassination-type team that were set up, funded through the Nugenhan Bank in Australia for taking over America or whatever they need to do domestically or overseas. This group was headed by somebody from Birmingham, Alabama, Franklin Joseph Camper, and they had guerrilla warfare manuals, automatic weapons, trained in the military and counterintelligence. They carried the usual kinds of weapons, Soviet weapons, Japanese, Israeli weapons, and were linked to the CIA and Army bases nearby. The FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms haven't been alerted to arrest them. They've passed it off that they simply trespassed a little too far near an atomic energy place. But I'm not sure that they were supposed to be near an installation and just went a little bit too far over and didn't know what they were doing. I don't believe that for a minute. And these people have not made much in the news in terms of biographies or what they were doing. As I said, they worked some of World War II and in the Green Berets in Vietnam. They could have been trained as mercenaries for United States terror or the type of Reichstag taking over a particular city or even a state or coming down with some kind of using atomic bombs to terrorize this country. It's that kind of an activity that would put Haig in office, even though the line of succession doesn't go immediately to Haig. He did managed to take over very nicely when Nixon was eased out. And besides the early rumor of Bush's death and also this group of people that were apprehended just by a fluke in Florida, there was a dinner in Washington, D.C. in honor of Haig that indicates the way Haig was moving just too fast. And if I were Ronald Reagan or George Bush, I would be a little bit scared of this power. This is really a conflict between the Defense Intelligence Agency and the CIA. Haig, working with a long team of Nazis from World War II, people that want to control the Pentagon, the White House, versus Bush, who is more mild, went to Yale. I don't know what kind of... He has power. He was director of the CIA, ambassador to China, wealthy oil man from Texas, but there's nothing gross or greedy. He doesn't seem to be desperate to grab the power, and Haig clawed his way all the way up to the top. Now, as soon as Ronald Reagan became president, or within 2 months after, there was a big dinner in Washington, D.C. for Haig, and it was reported in the Los Angeles Times, Capital dinner for Haig has the Jamesons hopping. Actress and business executive Eva Gabor Jamieson, whose husband is very influential with all branches of military and defense, came in from the Bahamas, where they have a home, for a black tie dinner at the Metropolitan Club for Secretary of State Alexander Haig. Senator Charles Percy, the Foreign Relations Committee, was there. Admiral Thomas B. Hayward, Chief of Naval Operations. British Ambassador Sir Nicholas Henderson. Prince and Princess Yoko Trubetsky. Washington developer C. Wyatt Dickerson, the Prince and Princess, Troubetzky, is their name. Albert A. Grasselli, Vice President of International Division of Rockwell International. Frank Jamieson, the host, was former affiliated with them. General Lyman Lemitzer, former Supreme Allied Commander for Europe and former Army Chief of Staff. Warren Adler, who publishes the Washington Dossier, and Mrs. Adler. Tunisia's Ali Heder, Hungary's Ferenc Ester Gallos, I'm not pronouncing that right, Jordan's Fazad El Sharaf, Ireland's Sean Donlan, Admiral George Anderson, former Chief of Naval Operations and former Ambassador to Portugal, where the Jamesons also have a home, Harry Combs, President of Gates Learjet, Donald Daly, President of San Diego's Daly Corporation, Thomas Powell, President of Martin Marietta Corporation, John Winkle, Vice President of Hughes Aircraft, Ben Schemmer, Editor of the Armed Forces Journal, and so forth. This is a little dinner party for Haig, and I should think that with this kind of promotion of his social life and this power, you could get a coup d'etat. The one in Spain didn't work, where the king was kicked out, where the military were held at bay, and the various forces didn't go along with them. In Chile, you did get a military junta overthrow the government that happened in South Korea. It does happen, and the United States has to face the possibility that you have a team there that are power-hungry. Democracy doesn't last forever. If there's a national crisis or an emergency, and they will create the crisis and they will create the emergency, these people are all behind Alexander Haig. That's a lot of people, because even though Reagan has his kitchen cabinet of a few old cronies that have been with him a long time, they don't have the power of this who's who of the dinner party for Alexander Haig. I'll do more on Haig and the power struggle in the White House in a minute. We'll take a break now because 30 minutes has gone by, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.